From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. It is indeed the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. We're rejoicing because Father Memo joins us in person.
Hello, everyone.
We can actually see what we look like. We're not even wearing our masks today.
It's been a while that I haven't seen you without a mask.
Yeah. You got younger, Father.
You too. It's the same thing that I was thinking when I saw you today.
I told the bishop that the first time he had been in person. You know, I said, you got younger, Bishop. And he says, now you have to go to confession.
No, he looks great.
He does look great, doesn't he?
Yeah, thanks be to God. He's healthier. Yeah. I guess he's healthier. At least
he's got that glow. Yeah.
Yes. Based on what I see, he does that. And we are glad. We are glad that we are having.
Very glad.
That Bishop Sori is healthy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, happy to be here. Thank you for inviting me. And I know you want me to talk about the big event for our diocese.
Yes.
It's always a big event because we have a priest in the making. Well, we have 9 seminarians, but one of them is already reaching the last steps of formation. Right. And that step that I'm talking about is called transitional diaconate.
Right.
You know,
we have the transitional diaconate and the permanent diaconate.
Correct. There are two things. It's the same sacrament. It's the same thing, the same sacrament. The difference is that there are men who are called to be permanent diaconates, deacons. Those men, most of them, are married.
Right.
And they are called to serve the church, to serve the parish, and at the same time to take care of their family, of course. No, there are some that are single, but still they are lay people. Well, they are not lay people anymore. They are ordained ministers, but they continue working, you know,
In a job out in general public.
Yes,
exactly. It could be school teachers. They could be businessmen. It could be a variety of things.
Anything plus serving the church as ministers,
right?
Ordained ministers, but now we have the the transitional. Well, now no, there is a transitional diaconate, which is for a man who is in the journey to priesthood,
right?
And that man, in order to become a priest, first needs to be a deacon.
Right.
The same, in order to serve at the altar, in order to obey the bishop, mm-hmm. in order to proclaim the gospel, which is the word of God, of course, and serve the needs of the parish.
Right.
So that transitional diaconate takes only a few months or maybe a few years in some cases. And that's what happened, on Saturday, December 4th. We have the celebration of the ordination of the diaconate of Eric Pereira. Now, Deacon Eric Pereira, the only Filipino seminarian. So we need more Asian people in our ranks in the seminary. So I invite those who are listening to us to please address this invitation to your children or grandchildren. Hey, do you want to be a priest? Because we don't have Asian priest in the making for the future.
Now, who's ordained at St. Charles Borromeo?
He was ordained at St. Charles Borromeo, and it was not announced. Why is that? Because Bishop wanted this to be a small ceremony, you know, a small celebration, knowing that it's not the last one.
Right.
The last one is going to be priesthood, unless that he's ordained as bishop. But we don't know that. So for sure, we want him to be ordained as a priest, and that's going to be the big one. Plus, there are other factors. You know, COVID is still here, so we didn't want so many people present. But the main reason was that, you know, let us wait for the big one, which is in his priestly ordination that we hope will happen in June. And still, he needs to take several steps in order to be a priest. But we pray, we hope that everything will go well, and he will be ordained as priest in June.
Oh, is he still in seminary at Menlo Park?
Correct. He continues studying. He's in the fourth year of the theological studies, and now he's still actually, in these days, he is having his finals together with the other seminarians of Mount Angel and St. Patrick. Mm-hmm. They are having their finals. They are in need of your prayers, please.
Yes.
I invite all the audience to please pray for them. And then he will continue his studies in January.
Very good. Very good. Yeah. Will he serve in a parish prior to his priestly ordination?
He is assigned already in a parish in Menlo Park, mm-hmm. or close to mm-hmm. Menlo Park,
oh, okay.
as part of the formation
right.
we call Field Ed. It's part of the formation mm-hmm. that they're receiving the seminary.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yes, very, very exciting. Very exciting news, you know, we have. And we are happy and we are thankful to the Lord because He keeps on calling people to serve Him in this diocese. But we need more. It's not enough. We need
now,
more.
Now, is he a native of the Philippines?
No, he was born here.
Born here, okay.
His parents are coming from the Philippines, mm-hmm. but he was born here in Sacramento. Very
good. In Sacramento.
In Sacramento, so. Yeah. His story is here. Actually, he went to St. Patrick's mm-hmm. Academy there on Franklin.
Right.
He did his school there. Then he went to Christian Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And then he studied, I don't know where he studied to be a teacher. That's the piece of information mm-hmm. that at this moment I don't remember very well. But he came back to Sacramento as a teacher, and he was a teacher at St. Charles Borromeo.
Wow.
That's why we chose that parish, St. Charles Borromeo, because it was the parish where he developed more his faith and his ministry to society. And yeah, he was happy to be there.
Wonderful. Well, that's an exciting day.
It is.
December. We were just reading some of the diaconate ordinations anniversaries.
Oh, okay.
And there were three in the diocese in December, and a lot of the priestly ordinations too, and there were a bunch in December.
Yeah, there used to be, you know, every bishop manages priestly ordinations in different ways. And in the last years, Bishop Soto wanted the ordinations happen during summer or the beginning of the summer.
In June, usually.
In June, yes.
Yeah. Well, that's great. So we will pray for Eric, and we'll pray for all our seminarians as they take their finals.
Thank you. And also another thing that I want to announce is we have every year the Christmas gathering for the seminarians. Mm-hmm. In the past years, we have been able to invite many people.
Right.
This year, unfortunately, we cannot make it
right.
because of COVID,
right.
but also because of financial situations, mm-hmm. you know. Yeah, the financial situation. So anyway, I invite anyone to, you know, if you are feel moved to do this, to write a little letter to the seminarians or a little card, or you can send a little, you know, gift card or something.
What a great idea.
For the seminarians. And in that way, also, you are promoting vocations.
Right.
Because imagine that you tell your children, hey, my children, how about you do a little Christmas letter for a seminarian, and any seminarian.
Any seminarian.
And
sure.
you just drop like a $5 there or whatever, you know, something that kids feel involved.
Right.
And you are already telling your kids, hey, there are men.
That's right.
There are men who are considering being a priest. And also I invite teachers in the schools or, you know, anyone to do something like this.
Right.
You are helping the seminarian, certainly, but also you are helping your family to consider priesthood.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. And I know you know this, the family support of a vocation is so important to it happening.
It is crucial. And certainly this gathering is going to be on December 15th. Mm-hmm. I don't know, maybe when you, member of the audience, listen to this recording or this program,
right.
sorry,
right.
it's going to be repeated several times.
Right.
Maybe it's going to be later over.
Right.
December 15th, but still you can send a letter to the seminarians
exactly.
anytime. Yes, address the letter to the Pastoral Center, to the Office of Vocations, and Marisela, the office assistant, will make sure that your letter or your card reaches our seminarians.
Very good.
Yeah.
Very good. So we only have a couple minutes, but what are your toughest challenges in doing a radio show?
In English?
Well, you do fine in English. You do it in Spanish language now.
Well,
we're comrades.
Thank you. Yeah, it's the toughest challenge. Oh my goodness, I can be creativity.
Uh-huh.
For instance, sometimes I have been asked to put something together, you know,
mm-hmm.
and my mind is like in blank, like a no. And I said to the one who is asking me, yes, tell me the topic.
Uh-huh.
Tell me the topic. Because I cannot just create something. I don't know, maybe it's anxiety
and
I don't know what to say. That can be one of the challenges, you know, creativity, to prepare something that can be good for others.
Mm-hmm.
And also the speech, you know.
Sure.
you know, the language is not my first language. And even in Spanish, when I'm in the radio, I notice that I speak very fast.
Uh-huh.
Blah, 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 blah. And sometimes they tell me, hey, slow down.
Yeah. So it's on Radio Santissimo.
Yeah, exactly.
And what's the format of your show?
Well, I participate in two shows at this point. And one of them is called Café Panifé, which is in the morning, early in the morning. And there are different elements. We start with a prayer. Then there is a prayer, another prayer. Then we read the gospel of the day. And there is a meditation upon the gospel. Mm-hmm. Because it's the first thing that people listen when they are going to their work or the schools. And then we talk about things going on in the world or in the country from the Catholic perspective. You know, just a few minutes. And then I speak about vocations, anything about vocations, like what I'm doing right now. And then we do the vocational cross. Mm-hmm. We open the phone for families to call and pick up the vocational cross, and they bring the vocational cross to their homes. Then what we do? Then we continue talking about vocations, and there are like different elements.
Right.
Because the time flies quickly, you know.
Oh, it does. It does. And then the second show, what do you do on that?
The second show is with young adults. And in that show, it's about a debate. They choose a topic, any topic. Like, for instance, today I was in the show, and the topic was whether it's good to give money to the church or not. Mm-hmm. They divide into two groups. One group say, yeah, it's good to give money to the church.
Are they all in the studio or...?
In the studio, some of them, and through Zoom, some others. Uh-huh. So depending on the possibility of each one of them. And there is another group that said, no, it's not good to give money to the church, and they give their reason. So the whole time is debating and arguing within each other. We clarify to the audience that all this is like a play, you know.
Sure.
It's not a personal opinion of those who are participating. It's just for the sake of the debate.
Right.
And at the end, my role is to give the Catholic approach or the Catholic answer to the points that they brought. And it's a moment of, it's like a catechetical moment for...
That sounds very interesting.
Good. It seems that the audience like it very much.
Does the audience participate?
Sometimes, yes. The phone is open. For instance, today there was a man that called from I don't know where, and he gave his point of view about the topic that we were talking about. Yeah, these are the two radio shows that I participate actively right now. Lorena has asked me to do more things, but I don't know. My creativity is not that great, and I don't have that much time, unfortunately.
Yeah, Lorena's great. She's really put her heart and soul into that.
Very creative, very creative, like you. Amazing. Thank you, Bob. What you do is amazing.
Oh, thank you. It's a labor of love.
It is indeed.
It's a complete joy to do this show.
It is indeed. And I thank all the members of the audience for being present and for being, you know, for following this Radio Catholic station, because it's so important. It's a way to evangelize people. It's a way to be connected with each other.
Sure.
And the diocese is so... We're so grateful that you are here together with your team, of course.
Yes, Gabe Sorensen.
Exactly. Thank you, Gabe, for your presence.
The angel
and the
Gabriel.
Work. Exactly. Yes, you are right. So thank both of you.
Thank you, Father. And if we don't see you again before Christmas, have a blessed and merry and holy Christmas.
The same for you and for your family and for the audience.
Thanks so much, Father.
Thanks, everyone.
We'll take a quick break. We'll be back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916 916- 972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour. We'd like to thank all the wonderful people and organizations, businesses in town and throughout the Diocese of Sacramento who have provided underwriting for the Bishop's Hour, some in the last few years, some have been with us for a very long time. If you would like to be an underwriter for the Bishop's Radio Hour, it's a wonderful opportunity to support this mission and also to support the diocese and also to get some recognition for your organization or for your business. So the easiest way to do this is to give us a shout, send us an email, radio@scd.org, and we can give you all the details about helping to underwrite the Bishop's Radio Hour. Again, that's radio@scd.org. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and the care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love. Just as many people in our community need a hand, countless others are reaching out to them with comfort and hope. You can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation. You can give them a call, 916-851-2700. That's 916-851-2700. And you can be confident that fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Ministry of Mercy Ministry or ministries that you choose. And what a wonderful treasure Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts has been for all of us here in the diocese as they transition into new ownership and management. They continue to offer wonderful workshops, wonderful resources for the Catholic community throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Not only does Easter's provide a wide array of Catholic books, both current releases and longtime classics, but they also sponsor a number of valuable workshops and lectures throughout the year. They're located at 6916 Sunrise Boulevard in Citrus Heights. Give them a call, 916-338-7272. We also receive a generous underwriting support by Crumley & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. If you have questions about retirement, Crumley & Associates can help you with their confident retirement approach that can help define a clear roadmap to get you where you want to go. You can contact them, get all the details at Crumley & Associates, 7956 California Avenue in Fair Oaks. They're at 916-638-4600. That's 916-638-4600. And we are certainly appreciative of the fine and longstanding support of the Mercy Foundation, of Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts, and of Crumley and Associates.
This is Deacon Kevin Stasko, the Director of the Office of Youth and Young Adult Ministry and Family and Faith Formation, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thank you, Deacon Kevin, and thanks for all you do here in Great Diocese of Sacramento. We've had three deacon ordinations in not this December, but anniversaries of their ordinations. Deacon Daniel Blanton on December the 5th, Deacon Jaime Garcia on December the 6th, and Deacon Rodolfo Kay on December the 9th. Now, those are Blanton is Deacon Blanton is 2005, Deacon Garcia is 2003, and Deacon Kay is 2017. Gabe, people always want to know how do you access the Bishop's Hour other than at 9 p.m. on weeknights and 10 a.m. on Saturday mornings?
Well, as part of your team, as Father Memo yes. referred to me, I like being that. I like the part of the team. That's the first time I've heard that one. I like that
one.
Are
you batting cleanup or what are you?
I guess. I mean, if there's only two of us, I'm the team.
You're the team. You're
that makes you the manager.
I guess.
Yeah.
I guess. I always wonder about teams and managers. And, you know, it's interesting because in baseball, the manager,
mm-hmm.
he could be 95 years old and he's wearing the uniform. The exact
yeah.
uniform the players are wearing, right down to the short pants with the long socks.
Don you know. Zimmer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I always think, what would it be like if the Kings basketball coach is out there in, you know, the shorts and the jersey or the 49ers
funny.
Coach is
he's got shoulder pads on.
Shanahan is out there. You know, with his helmet and shoulder pads. And
how great would it be if every time the basketball coach gets angry and wants to work with the refs, he tears away his tearaway warm-ups
exactly.
and runs out on the court, starts yelling at the ref? I believe, and I could be completely wrong, that tradition in baseball stems from the fact that a long time ago, there was not necessarily a manager who didn't play. It was usually like a team captain who was the manager. So they would play. And I think, as we talked about, a couple weeks ago, and ironically, but we're about to talk about it again, baseball is so rooted in tradition that if it was done in the 1800s, it's done today.
Yeah, and back then, the manager, logically, is the guy who put the team together
right.
and was a player himself.
Right, but back then, it was always the owner was what would be considered like a general manager now, and they paid for the contracts, they did all the stuff, and then the manager was the guy they paid to basically be on the field with the guys. Right. And all. And I think that probably stopped sometime early in the 1900s, because I referenced the Chicago White Sox from 1919, the infamous Black Sox team. Their manager was an older gentleman who obviously didn't play
right.
baseball at the time. He was in his 70s, I believe. So, you know, obviously that tradition ended sometime in the early 1900s. But still, it's interesting that baseball is such a traditional sport that it's like, you know, because, I mean, football, I mean, you always get the guy, you know, you get the old Bear Bryant with the,
right.
you know, the hat and the suit. And that was the football tradition for the longest time, was wear a suit, coat and tie. Yeah. Tom Landry, I think, was the last of those coaches. And
well, so Father Memo, the director of the Office of Vocation, referred to us as team.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think we need matching shirts at least.
I'm sure that the folks at the diocese here would be happy that you and I finally instill some kind of dress code. Because we've been getting away for about, you know, for you for over 20 years, me for about 15 with dressing as we feel. So I'm pretty sure they would be happy with that. But yes, you asked earlier, how do people get the access the Bishop's Hour? And I haven't come on and given the spiel for a few weeks. I want to make sure I do. Go to your phone. It's real easy. And it is every phone, whether you have a Samsung, Google type phone or an iPhone, comes preloaded with certain apps. One of those apps is either Google Plus or iTunes. You go to either one of those and you search for Sacramento Bishop's Hour. And then you click on that and you'll say subscribe or follow or whatever sort of verbiage your platform uses. And you click on that. We are not going to email you. We're not going to spam you. We're not going to text you. Nothing. All that does is make it so every time you open that app, it'll tell you, hey, you have some shows you haven't listened to. So obviously, you're going there to listen to a podcast or else you wouldn't open it. It's kind of like right. the old used car lot thing. You're not going to walk on the car lot if you're not looking for a car.
Right.
Well, we're not going to make it so you are forced to open the app. The app opens on your own, and then there it is. And I think that it's at a time when you're going to be getting together with family, maybe you have some parents, grandparents, you know, kids, whatever, that you want to listen to the show, you will now be standing next to them in their phones. Go on there, show them how to do it. Show it's real easy. My mom is the kind of mom who will call me, and the answer typically is, "Mom, is it plugged in?" And she goes, "Oh, never mind," and hangs up the phone. She is a subscriber to the show. So there is no electronic sort of intelligence you have to do this. It's pretty easy. Right. And then if you
and
can't...
there's no charge.
There's no charge, 100% free. And that's the other thing is you can always go to our website as well, which is scd.org, Sacramento Catholic Diocese.
And actually, I've done that many times on my computer.
And you can do it on your phone too.
scd.org. And here, if you find the Bishop's Hour real quickly.
Yeah.
And then it's a whole list of shows.
Yeah.
The date they ran and who the guests were.
Right.
And you just hit it, and it's like magic. You hear the angels sing.
The only thing about it that is different than the actual podcast app is the podcast app will save them longer, where I believe online on our website, that's sort of a weekly rotation that they go through. So Monday will replace last Monday kind of thing. Right. So, you know, if it's something you missed a couple of days ago, go there and listen to it. The other important thing is if you can... write a review, because the more reviews a podcast gets, the more looks it gets on that platform, and which means more people will know about it. More people who search for Catholic content will find us. Right. And that all that means is we get to have people listen to Sacramento Diocese type stuff more. So, you know, it's something I think is really important to do, and it helps support the show. And it's a way you can support the show without having to pay anything.
Right.
We're not asking you for a dollar, a dime, nothing. Just, you know, 60 minutes of your life. All right.
And we appreciate every listener we have.
We do. Bob and his team, all of us.
The team. Yes, indeed. Well, we were very fortunate the other day to have Rob Kasmark, who is the studio director and a film director as well at Spirit Juice Studios. And they have put out the story of Gil Hodges, who played for the Brooklyn Dodgers and a little bit for the Los Angeles Dodgers and then the New York Mets, and just a very spiritual Catholic, carried his Catholicism right onto the baseball diamond, and just an inspirational guy, Soul of a Champion, the Gil Hodges story. And we sat down with him by phone and had just a wonderful conversation about baseball, about Gil Hodges, and about our wonderful Catholic faith. So we're going to bring you that interview now. Pleased and honored to welcome in Rob Kasmark, who is one of the producers of Soul of a Champion. Rob, good to hear from you.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for having me on. This is awesome.
How close was I on your last name?
You got it.
I get an A?
You get 10 points.
Now you get 10 points. Or maybe a grand slam. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be that's perfect. Good segue.
A Soul of a Champion. Tell us, Gil Hodges. Believe it or not, I'm dating myself. I have Gil Hodges in my baseball card collection.
That is awesome.
And it wasn't a card I bought. I mean, from a collector or something. It was a card I collected as a little kid. I paid a nickel and got like 6 or 7 baseball cards and a really bad piece of bubblegum.
Why is the bubblegum always terrible baseball
cards? It was flat and kind of powdery, and you could break it in half. It was like, you know, it was like a real thin layer of ice or something. It was terrible.
You might chip your tooth on it too.
Oh yeah, I've paid dental bills ever since then. I should sue.
That's too funny. You know, Gil. So I don't remember Gil from I'm 38. So, but I grew up in Chicago. I still live in Chicago. So the White Sox. I knew White Sox history very well.
Uh-huh.
You know, Carlton Fisk was an idol of mine. In Minnie Minoso and all that stuff. So, anyways, I had no idea who Gil was, but a baseball fan. And got connected and known Catholic Athletes for Christ, Kevin and Ray, and then also David, and they knew about Gil. They presented this idea of, like, who Gil was, his character, and they really intrigued me, and made me want to be part of this project. And the funny thing is, like, the more I worked on it, the more I got involved, just the more, you know, I fell in love with Gil and his story and what he meant and just the incredible things that he means for so many people everywhere. And once this book came out, just seeing the impact of how many people just cherish him, it's just incredible. So, I mean, I can go on and on about how great Gil is.
Well, so tell us first about Catholic Athletes for Christ.
Yeah, so Catholic. So I work with Spiritus Studios, but Catholic Ethics for Christ is the people that we partner with, and they do a lot of really awesome stuff. So, I mean, as the name would imply, Catholic athletes for Christ. So a lot of Catholic athletes that play professionally now or that are retired. So, you know, ones that are retired but are still they do a lot with it, like Mike Sweeney, you know, who is just an awesome person and does so much. And so they do everything from, you know, making contact with priests that are on, you know, they're part of the teams, or they do annual retreats. So they do a ton of stuff. I'm not doing service to all the great things that they do, but they're involved so much and have so many contacts that all the major, you know, baseball teams and the people that support it.
Yeah, I'm familiar with the Campus Crusade for Christ, of course, which is not a strictly Catholic organization, but has done a lot of things on college campuses.
Nice. Yeah, they're not as familiar with them, but I think, yeah, similar, except, you know, in the professional sporting arena.
Right. And what's Spirit Juice Studios?
So Spirit Juice Studios is a Catholic production company. So we've been around for going on 15 years, and essentially we create Catholic films, promo videos, really Catholic, any sort of video content, and have been doing so for quite a while. And so the way we survive as a business is people hire us to make projects for them. So a lot of our more notable clients would be we've worked a lot with Bishop Barron from War on Fire, the Knights of Columbus, USCCB, and then, you know, some individual people. So there's a film called The Brow Removed, which was like a 3-minute short film showing when, you know, heaven meets earth and the mass and stuff. And so it's, you know, just an individual person, but it you know, made its rounds in the Catholic world online.
What's the title of it again?
That was called The Veil Removed.
Uh-huh.
I think you go to veilremoved.com, it pops up. I mean, there was one that got like millions of views online. And really, it was an incredible project. There was, prior to it, the only thing that really existed was paintings that showed, you know, during Mass, like the elevation of the host with the priest, you'd see Christ on the cross and all the angels and saints, and just heaven meeting earth. And so we did that in a movie, in a short film, you know, in about a 3 or 5 minute short film that showed that. And, you know, so a little bit of a story within there, too. So really, you know, just incredible opportunities to work on these sort of things that can help bring people closer to God and into their Catholic faith.
So is the film about Gil Hodges to advance his cause for the Hall of Fame or for sainthood?
Well, first it's the Hall of Fame, but you know what? I don't think sainthood's too far off, right? I mean, his character really showed that.
That's kind of sainthood for a baseball player.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. It's definitely sainthood for a baseball player. And I think you probably know, like, the vote is a couple days away. It's on Sunday. It's December 5th. And so people, you know, are clamoring all around the internet to find out what the vote going to be.
Now, how does the Hall of Fame has kind of a strange voting? You're only eligible so many years, and then if you don't make it by X, you're done, right?
It's about as clear as mud, from my perspective. But what I do know is that, in theory, you know, you're never off the list per se, right? But the reality is, there's so many people that are up for candidacy. And the reason why this year is so important and why it was, you know, we wanted to make sure it got on time is because they're calling it, I believe it's called the Golden Era. So people from Gil's era, which is not a normal, like, section, from my understanding, that they have during the vote. And so
So it's a different vote than the I don't know what you would call it, the regular Hall of Fame or something. It's part of the Hall of Fame, but it's the Golden Era.
Exactly, yeah. So... yeah, so a lot kind of rides on these next couple of days, and the flow was to, you know, drum up awareness of Gil and hopefully rally a lot of support. So the people that, you know, vote on it, which I believe is like 16 people or so, can see that, listen, you know, there's a desire, you know, like the argument's there, you know, that's otherwise he wouldn't even be considered. And, like, there's a desire there to have him included in the hall, and, you know, and people want him there. So,
Well, you know, speaking of the Hall, just the regular Hall of Fame, his numbers are, you know, I'm not a voter, but I follow it. And his numbers are quite good, and his accolades are incredible because he's been on the All-Star team a number of consecutive years. You know, it's a pretty impressive record. 370 home runs puts him up there with some of the big hitters. Twice had over 40 home runs in a season. Puts him up there as a slugger. You know, even though you don't really necessarily think of him that way. Had some really great years and played for the Brooklyn Dodgers.
Yeah. Well, you know, his numbers speak for themselves. That's what numbers do. You know, are there people with better numbers? Sure, but his numbers still are in that same caliber that's along there. And you bring up the Brooklyn Dodgers, which I think is a really interesting point because the year the Brooklyn Dodgers won the World Series, he was the only one that drove in the two runs. So, you know, he has a certain just like specialness. That's probably not the right word to say, but like uniqueness, I think, to not only his record but how he impacted these teams. And when you can't, you know, you mentioned the Brooklyn Dodgers and what he did, you know, in the World Series there. You know, you can't not mention the Miracle Mets. And how he led that team from, you know, really some called them the lovable losers, and in 2 years to World Series champions. It's a testament to what he did to that team.
And he was the general manager there, right?
Yes, yeah. He was you know, he played, it was like, he went through a time where, you know, I think he played for them. I'm forgetting a little bit now, so I apologize. I think he played for them at a really, really brief period, and then they brought him on
maybe a couple of years with the Mets right at the end of his playing career. Yeah.
I believe so. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, Gil, another thing, like in the film we talk about where it's like, you don't name bridges after people that were good or just, you know, notable, and you don't name schools, and you got to really put a mark on something, both in your career as a baseball, but who you were outside of that, to have that sort of recognition still to this day. I mean, there's a bridge named after Gil, both in his hometown where he grew up, and then also in where he made himself a home out in New York. So, he's just an awesome guy, man. I can keep going on and on.
Where was he from?
Princeburg, I'm messing it up. In Indiana. He's from Indiana. I'll leave it at that. I'm butchering the town, so my apologies on that name. But yeah, from Indiana.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting. I was looking at some Gil Hodges memorabilia and stuff. I came across a wonderful recollection from Vin Scully, the long time announcer for the Dodgers, who started with the Dodgers in Brooklyn, followed them to Los Angeles, and covered them for, you know, 67 years, and finally retiring, a very strong Catholic himself. He says, "I am often asked who the best ball player was that I watched during my broadcasting career. In looking back over my 67 years behind the microphone, I was truly blessed to watch firsthand so many of the all-time greats performing at their very best on the biggest stages in the game's history. It is truly impossible for me to single out just one player. However, in terms of the players I watched who performed at a high level on the playing field, but at an even higher level off the field in how they lived and carried out their lives, my response is an easy one: Gil Hodges." Wow.
Wow.
That's pretty impressive.
I mean, I got chills. That's like, that says something. I mean, that really says something.
Think of all the players that Vin Scully saw in 67 years. It's mind-boggling.
And you know, Vin's been, if you could look up on, you know, if you just type in Vin Scully Hodges on YouTube, you'll see him on several interviews that he's, you know, done, just speaking about, like, why isn't Gil in the Hall of Fame? Like, that's like what, like, it's kind of like a loose end that he wants to tell it before, you know, it's like, he sh- should be in there. He deserves that because the hall, that's what it's made for, people that you can look at and say, that's a character to follow, you know, both on the field and off the field. And, you know, baseball is sort of the American dream sport, you know, and America's pastime. It's something that for generations ever continue, and having people like Gil in there, I think it's so important for, I mean, I'm a father of two boys who are just starting to appreciate baseball and enjoying it. And I would love to be able to, like, point, like, look at this guy. Look at Gil, because he is someone you would like to, you know, follow suit after. And I think it's just so important. And, you know, the film, so we do Catholic-based stuff. That's, you know, the basis of the stuff. And the film is primarily about, you know, baseball and Gil. But the reason we wanted to be involved is because his Catholic faith was so fundamental in how he carried himself. And really, you know, for all of us, and you know, all of us striving to be saints, like, that's the idea. Like, your faith may not be something that is talked about in every second or part of your day, but it should be part of it in how you conduct yourself to others. And I think Gil was just a living example of that.
So what do we know about Gil Hodges and his faith?
So he was Catholic. He attended a mass every week. You know, and that was, you know, you might say, oh, well, many Catholics attend mass every week. Okay, well, not every Catholic is on a professional baseball team traveling and may not have access to the site or easy access to that. That didn't affect Gil. Gil was there all the time. Not only that, but I mean, just in back when, well, I know it's still a practice of not observing many meat on Fridays, but when it was very much not just a Lenten thing, there's a story in the film where actually Ben tells it because he knows it firsthand. They had a big doubleheader, a big game, and someone goes to give him, you know, a nice big steak dinner, and he goes, No, thank you. And the person's like, no, I mean, you're hungry. You just had a huge day. Like, you need to eat. He goes, I'm too close to the boss. I can't, because it was a Friday. And so, you know, small things like that are big things, right? You know, it's how you, you know, there's so many stories of just how the friendship he had with Jackie Robinson and different things, and just sort of like, you could take it from a personal piety thing of how he conducted himself, but also, you know, if you want to call it a social justice thing of, like, how he treats others and how he makes everyone feel included and things like that. So it just bled in so many different areas of his life. And his son even said, you know, in order, it was God, family, and country. He goes, and that didn't get altered. And so, you know, hearing his son say that how many years later, that was his dad, you know, sort of thing for life, is, I think, just shows how important it was for him.
Yeah, the stuff about Jackie Robinson and Gil is pretty touching. That Jackie Robinson, of course, the first African American to play in the major leagues, and took a tremendous amount of abuse getting there, took a tremendous mm-hmm. amount of abuse after he got there. Not that being a superstar makes you immune from abuse, but my goodness, he wasn't just the first African-American baseball player. He was a tremendous baseball player, Jackie Robinson. Mm-hmm. And it's Gil just kind of took him under his wing and really tried to protect him from all of that, even going so far as to do grocery shopping for him at spring training in Florida when Jackie wouldn't have been allowed in the grocery store.
Yeah. It's, you know, we look at that and say, well, like, first off, that's crazy that I was even like that. And secondly, like, well, that's the right thing to do. And, you know, I would say, I think people of faith look at that as it's the right thing to do because it's the Christ-like thing to do to always look sure. at anyone, no matter who they are, anything at all. But Christ is in that person. And it's our job and it's our duty as Christians, as Catholic Christians, to serve another person like that. And so I think I would just assume that was, you know, the sort of like moral backing for Gil to serve others like that and do anything he could to make sure that people are taken care of.
It's interesting, too, that with the Hall of Fame, the voting criteria, in addition to all the stats and records, awards, et cetera, it also includes consideration for the integrity, sportsmanship, and character of each nominee. Sounds like Gil's a slam dunk.
A grand slam.
A grand slam. Yeah, you don't slam dunk in baseball, do you?
I suppose you could. I mean, you know, I feel like some of those mascots do some stuff
some
like that.
Some of the mascots do. My favorites, I forget, it must be Milwaukee where they race the sausages. I love that one. Or is that Philadelphia? I'm not sure. Somebody where they have four or five sausages racing.
That's good. Yeah, they really upped the ante on it. I feel like when I was growing up, the mascots weren't quite as entertaining as they are now.
Yeah, mascots used to shag foul balls. Now it's like, holy cow, they're the show. That's half the reason kids want to go to the ballpark is to see the mascots.
I know. Yeah, they do some pretty entertaining stuff.
Yeah, that's great. Well, so tell us how you put together this film. Do you have footage of Gil playing?
Yeah, so, you know, the footage of Gil, we did and we didn't. So there was a lot of stuff with that MLB. So we didn't have anything personally, and Gil's family only has photographs of Gil. So there's a ton of footage on, you know, Major League Baseball. They owned it. And so we got in contact with them pretty early to see if, you know, that can be licensed, which it can, at a very, you know, premium cost, but it can. And so... you know, we relied on a lot of that to sort of show the footage of Gil, you know, in action. But that could only cover so much. And so we constructed the documentary by interviewing people that were in his life. And so, you know, Vin is sort of, I don't want to say the backbone, but I think Vin and Gil Jr., you hear from them the most because they had so much interaction with them. And so a lot of this story was constructed based on their interviews. And then, you know, we also interviewed, you know, Kuhn from the New York Mets, people that he had coached. We interviewed Tommy Lasorda before he passed, which was just like such an honor to be able to interview Tommy Lasorda. And so I'm of the era, I grew up on Sega Genesis. One of my very first games was Tommy Lasorda baseball, age 5 or 6 right. or something. So the interview item was just a really crazy thing. So people like that played with him, that he coached, and then also people that he impacted. So from his hometown that he never met, but his life and his story is one that, you know, it lives on and continues that. So, you know, like a lot of documentaries, you schedule the right interviews, you know, ask questions you think are relevant for the story that you have, you know, roughly constructed. And then a lot of it and so much of it comes together in the post-production process where you're like, okay, let's weave these stories together. What makes a good narrative? Because, you know, although Gil has a very, you know, powerful life and story, how do you make that compelling in 28 minutes so people feel like there's three acts, like, you know, beginning, middle, and end? And so that was our job as filmmakers to do that and to give the audience that experience.
So he, if he were alive today, he'd be about 97 years old, I'm guessing, maybe. Yeah, I think 97 years old. Died very young, died at age 47.
That's scary. Every time I hear that part in the film, and I'm like, that is just, yeah. And how, you know, he, in the film, Gil Jr. talks about his last time seeing his dad alive, which is just like so basically the story is Gil Jr. and his dad are walking towards the elevator, and Gil Sr. says, "Take care of your mom." And Gil Jr.'s like, "Okay, but I'll see you tomorrow."
Yeah.
And what do you mean? "Just take care of your mom."
Wow.
Okay. Walking the elevator, because that's the last time he ever saw his dad alive. So, like, I mean, I don't know. You know, like that's the sort of something like, this is, you know, maybe from Gil Sr., it was just something that, like, just to say it, you know?
Right. Wow. So maybe he had a premonition.
Maybe. It's one of those
Because he died of apparently a massive heart attack.
Yeah. So I mean, you can't predict that. It's one of those things where
you can't
predict it
unless maybe he had been having some issues and didn't tell anybody. And
you
don't know. But and that's not very far removed from the end of his baseball career.
No, he was still in. I mean, he was still I believe they're in spring training, or it was still active. Like, it wasn't sure. Like, yet his career had stopped. So, yeah, very wild.
Yeah, well, it's a – so what has – do you think you've gotten your film to enough of the voters?
You know what? I think so. I've been keeping tabs of, like, you know, anytime it gets out of different stuff, and it's really hits. I mean, MLB Network did a big thing on it right when it came out, talking about it. Several news stations did pieces on it. It's been a lot of large, you know, publications for sports, for baseball specifically. Large figures, you know, on Twitter have retweeted it, expressed their support for it. So I think it's made it, you know, we kind of try to time in the right, you know, right after the World Series that it came out. So people weren't, you know, it didn't conflict with it. So I think it reached all the people it needed to. Mm-hmm. And right in time where, you know, at this point we just wait and see. We actually have a film crew. They'll be at Gil Jr.'s home on Sunday. So, because if he gets in, they'll call him. I believe they'll call him first. Mm-hmm. And say, you know, if he got in. If he doesn't get in, then he doesn't get a phone call. So we do want to be there because we just feel like that's just such a monumental, like, time that if he gets in, to be able to capture that and that excitement would just be, you know, once in a lifetime.
Yeah, that's when you get four calls from telemarketers.
Every time, right.
Every time the phone rings, you jump and, oh, it's them.
Oh, my God. We've filmed the wrong thing. They're on call waiting. They pick up the telemarketers and the hall
can't get through.
Yeah.
Please call us back.
Oh, man. Yeah, you get a voicemail.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, let's hope and pray that he gets in, and let's hope that he also gets up into the big Hall of Fame, which is mm-hmm. What this whole life we're living is all about, you know, and it's nice to have examples like him. And, you know, it's interesting because, like I say, I didn't go looking for a Gil Hodges card, but when I saw that you guys were making this film, I said, I know I have a Gil Hodges card, and I've got a Roy Campanella card, and, you know, Moose Skowron, who played for the Yankees, and Whitey Ford, and all those guys of that era, Ted Kluszewski, and... Because there was something about Gil Hodges that I was attracted to. I never met him. I never lived in Brooklyn. Wasn't particularly a Brooklyn Dodgers fan or a Los Angeles Dodgers fan. But there was something about Gil Hodges that was attractive to me as a child, you know. And so much of that is demeanor. You know, it just is. You know, you see him and you go, this is a good person. You see him on TV or you hear about him, and this is a good person. And so if he could affect me from 3,000 miles away, he must have been the real deal.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, and it's still to this day, you know, that he's you remember him. You know, it's not like, oh, someone you thought of, and yeah, at the time, you know, but like, He sticks with you, and I think it shows that, you know, when you have an impact like that on other people's lives that really goes deep and you're really a truly good person, then people know that.
Yeah, as soon as I heard about this project, I said, oh, Gil Hodges, let's get him on. Let's get him on now. You know, I mean, this is, I mean, it wasn't like, oh, there was some player in the 50s and I've never heard of the guy, but yeah, we'll, let's put him on, you know. But I was like Gil Hodges, let's do it.
That's awesome.
So I wish you guys well. I wish Gil Jr. well. I will not call him that morning.
Try not to. Yeah.
I will try not to.
Wait till Monday.
Don't give his number out. We're doing a survey to see how many people listen to the Bishop's Hour. Oh, man. Well,
that's good.
Yeah, that's great stuff. And I hope our paths cross. Thanks for doing this project. And thanks so much for taking the time to be with us today. We really, really appreciate it.
Oh, my gosh. No, I thank you for having me on. This is awesome. I mean, first off, just love talking about Gil. And second, appreciate just the support. And, yeah, we'll all say a prayer for Gil and see what happens then on Sunday.
And when you have another project, please keep us in mind. We do more than baseball here on the Bishop's Hour.
But love it. Yeah, I definitely will. There are a couple of things coming up, too, so I'll be in touch with you guys when we talk about that.
I remember about, it was at the time of the World, it was right before the World Series during the playoffs. We had our Bishop, Bishop Soto, on, and he's from Orange County in California, not Orange County in Florida. And the Dodgers were playing the Giants. And so in this area, it's big Giants fans. We're about 70 miles from San Francisco. And a lot of hatred for the Dodgers. I mean, that's kind of a strong word for a Catholic, but, it's kind of...
Oh, yeah, cup and socks. I get it.
You know how it goes. And so I said to the bishop, who's from Orange County, which isn't really the Dodgers, it's more the Angels and et cetera. Mm-hmm. But I said, so what could be better than a city named after St. Francis playing against the city of Angels? What could be more Catholic than that?
Yeah.
It's subtle, but there it is. People say, San Francisco Giants, Los Angeles Dodgers, and they don't even know they're saying the words, the Angels, mm-hmm. St. Francis,
So, hidden plain sight, the Catholic stuff all around.
And I asked him which team he was rooting for or predicting, and he took the Fifth Amendment.
Wise. Keep his,
a very wise man.
Yeah.
Well, Rob, great talking to you, and I will be sitting by the phone on Sunday, hoping for a call.
Nice, awesome.
Hey, take
awesome.
Care.
Well, thank you again. I appreciate it, and have a blessed Advent.
Hey, same to you and your family. God bless.
God bless.
That's Rob Kastmark, who is the producer, one of the producers of the film Soul of a Champion, about Gil Hodges, who played in the 50s and early 60s for the Brooklyn Dodgers and then the Los Angeles Dodgers. I still can't imagine, Gabe, you're a little kid growing up and you're a Brooklyn Dodgers fan or a New York Giants fan, that not the football team but the baseball team, and then one day in 1957, you don't have a team to root for anymore. They're 3,000 miles away. It's amazing. Rip your heart out. So that's a great story, though. And I heard great things about Gil Hodges and his Catholic faith and how he really was a living example to everybody of that. We'll take a break. We'll be back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
This is Julie Sly, editor of Ant.
Well, here I am in a river of questions. Can I pour my heart out to a listening ear? Well, I see this life, its valleys and mountains, and I think of all the roads that brought me here. Oh, that brought me here. Walking down, walking down the road. Well, I've questioned my reasons, this life I'm living. I question my ability to judge wrong from right. Well, I questioned all the things I've ever called certain. My race, my religion, my country, my mind.